This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Now on this week's edition of Food Friday, a side dish takes the starring role. Potatoes are one of the most versatile foods out there, and our next guest has lots of ideas and recipes, along with some general advice on making great dinners at home. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you like to prepare potatoes and or eat said potatoes? Roasted, fried, braised, baked, twice baked, mashed? Love to hear your recipes, your advice. Do you have a favorite kind of potato? Do you have a question for our guest about what goes wrong maybe when making a potato dish? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Molly Stevens is a Vermont-based cooking teacher, recipe developer, editor, and cookbook author whose books include All About Roasting, One Potato, Two Potato, and her most recent All About Dinner, Simple Meals, Expert Advice. Molly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, it's one of your older cookbooks, but you did a whole book about potatoes. What gets you excited about potatoes that you could put that much effort and love into them?
Yeah, it's a big book, too. It's over 300 recipes. Yeah, you know, Rob, when I I co-authored the book with a good friend of mine, Roy Finnemore, and when he actually came up with the idea for the book, I took a moment and said, really, a whole book on potatoes? Because I love potatoes, I always have, but I was a little concerned that I might tire of them after, you know, a year and a half or so that it takes to develop all those recipes. But I have to tell you, Rob, I love them more after I wrote the book than before.
Do you have a favorite variety of potato to cook with? Or is it, you know, mission dependent? You like this kind of potato for that, this kind of potato for that?
It's a little of both. I mean, my favorite one is the one that's on my kitchen counter that's about to become dinner. But the variety, that's exactly, I think, what really turned me on to the potential of potatoes is when I first started thinking about it. I was like, well, there's a red potato and a white potato and a russet potato. But once you really delve into it, my goodness, it goes on and on in terms of varieties, and more as our farmers markets and specialty markets and even just regular supermarkets expand the variety that's available. And they all, you know, they have different tastes, they have different characteristics, and yet they're incredibly forgiving. I mean, you don't have to like have just this special potato for this special dish, but it's really fun to kind of go down a potato rabbit hole, if you will.
And stepping aside from potatoes, I mean, potatoes are a good fit for this. In All About Dinner, you make the case that the point that really good home-cooked meals don't have to be incredibly complicated and fussy. Can you talk a little bit about your philosophy of dinners?
You know, I've been cooking for a long time, and I've taught cooking for a long time at a lot of different venues. And you know, the simplest way to learn how to cook is to cook. And the simplest way to cook is to make a meal for yourself, for your household, or whoever you have, your neighbor, whoever you happen to be around. And I mean, something as simple as baking a potato, boiling an egg, frying an egg, doing something, just that simple act of cooking doesn't have to be complicated. And you feed yourself and you discover things and you learn things. I don't know, it develops a self-sufficiency. I can't say enough about how much better things can be if we learn to cook for ourselves.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about potatoes with cookbook author Molly Stevens, author of books including One Potato, Two Potato, and her most recent All About Dinner, Simple Meals, Expert Advice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite kind of potato, a favorite way to cook potatoes or recipe, or do you need some advice? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can find some recipes from our guest over at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's, Molly, check one of those out now. It's party potatoes, a mashed potato that is a crowd pleaser. Can you tell us what makes this one special?
Yeah, party potatoes. And I chose that recipe for now because we're kind of gearing up for the holidays, and it's one that I do for the holidays because it's, you know, mashed potatoes are a given on a lot of holiday tables. Maybe on yours, Rob? maybe?
Oh, yeah. No, I like making mashed potatoes with some pratfalls. Yeah. I'll ask you about in a minute. But
Oh, good. So anyway, party potato is a mashed potato casserole, if you will, meaning you can make it ahead. And that's why it really works for me and my situation. I can make it ahead and take it to where I'm going for Thanksgiving. And it gets enriched with a few little extra things, cream cheese being one of them, that adds both a really great tang, but it also gives you this incredible creamy, fluffy, if those two go together, texture that lasts. Because the problem with mashed potatoes, if they sit around too long, they can just kind of get gluey. But yeah, this party potato dish, it's a make-ahead casserole, and you can actually use your KitchenAid blender or any mixer to make it. And then I the party potato version is pretty straightforward seasonings-wise, but I play around with it and add horseradish or scallions or all sorts of things, just depending on, you know, what way you want to go with that menu.
And you just teased my pratfall. Usually my mashed potatoes come out great, but every once in a while they get, I don't know, like oversaturated or something. And like you said, they end up kind of gluey. How can I make sure I never, ever do that again?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a couple things. The first is going back to those types of potato. The best potato for a mashed potato, the classic, I should say. I want to say the best because there's different ways. But the classic is a russet, an Idaho. I don't know, they go by different things in different parts of the country. But it's the big old baking potato, a big starchy, dry potato. And what makes those so great for mashed potatoes is they're super starchy, which means they're super thirsty. So they love to absorb as much butter and milk and sour cream and heavy cream, whatever you want to throw at them. So they're a great vehicle for a lot of enrichment. Do you know, Rob, when they haven't worked well for you, what type of potato you used?
I think it might have been russet, but it's been a while since I botched them that badly, I'll be honest with you. Mostly I'm doing pretty good lately.
Good. I love to use a ricer, which is kind of an old-fashioned tool for mashing the potatoes, and that helps to get a really fluffy texture. Mm. Another really great tip for getting a really dry mashed potato is after. So you boil the potato, right? And then you drain it. And then put the back on the stove in that pan without any fat, without anything, and sort of shake them around for a little bit. And really dry them out before you start adding things. Oh. Because if they're not really dry and you try to add things, they're just going to end up soupy and, as you say, maybe even a little bit gluey. So I tend to peel and chunk them in big chunks, like, you know, baseball, golf ball size chunks, not too small, before I boil them. And then as soon as they're, you know, tender, drain them, put them back in the pot, low heat, and just really shake that pot around. And you'll see a film of starchy potato film on the bottom of the pan. And that's a sign that you've got them really, really dry. Then you can start to mash them and slowly add your enrichments.
Excellent. Well, let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Timothy is with us in southern Minnesota. Timothy, hi.
Hi. Hi, Molly. Huge fan of one potato and also all about roasting and all about braising. My question is, I know you've had a lot of students over the years, and you've worked with a lot of at-home cooks, and you were talking about how experience can really, is kind of the number one thing that can help people become better cooks. Are there other things that people can do that would kind of help them accelerate, or become more confident in the kitchen?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Molly.
Yeah. No, thanks for calling. Yeah. What can help besides experience? Reading. I'm a big fan of reading cookbooks, finding cookbooks you love, and then sort of following the thread of those cookbooks. You know, there's so much online right now that I find it's remarkable how much you can find. And also, you know, friends, I find sharing with friends who like to cook, and I know it's, you know, been difficult over the past couple how long it's been, but year or so that we've been able to get together. But even if it's like we do these potlucks where somebody cooks something and then somebody else brings something and you sort of swap recipes that way. So that's how I help, you know, advance my own, creativity is by sort of surrounding myself with friends or reaching out to other friends or I try something, I say, how'd you make that? Or if you are at a restaurant, to ask questions. And also, I don't know where you shop, but if you do shop at farmers markets and things, I find that farmers can be an incredible source of ideas for how to prepare various things. So I guess those are a few of my, and then tasting. The other thing about cooking that I don't think I talk about enough and a lot of people is when you're learning to cook, obviously cooking is really important, but tasting as you go, tasting your ingredients. I talk about this in All About Dinner, my latest book, but just starting, you know, throughout the whole process, tasting as you're going, and you're going to learn so much about the process if you do it that way.
Thanks a lot for that call, Timothy. We're talking to cooking teacher and cookbook author Molly Stevens about mainly potatoes on this edition of Food Friday. Her books include One Potato, Two Potato, and her most recent, All About Dinner. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite potato, a favorite potato dish? Do you need some general cooking advice, especially dinner-related cooking advice from Molly? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and find a couple recipes from Molly at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up, we'll check out another fancier roasted potato recipe. At least it looks fancier. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our Food Friday talk with Molly Stevens, author of the cookbooks One Potato, Two Potato, and All About Dinner, among others. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your potato favorites or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Hayward. Tom, hi.
Hi. Say, I was wondering, in your opinion, what's the best potato for potato salad? When I make it, I typically make about, 5 pounds of potatoes. And I use celery, radishes. For every potato, I put in an egg and a red onion and mayo and then a little sour cream. And it's very good, Lowry seasoned salt. But the next day, it's runny. And I was wondering, am I using the wrong potato? I usually use, like, russets or something.
Interesting, Tom. Sounds delicious. Molly, any thoughts for Tom?
Yeah. Tom, thanks for calling. You said you use russets generally?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, by the way, your salad sounds great. Sounds like a real classic. And the russet is going to be, I find, a little soft for potato salad. So, and it'll lose its shape a little bit more quickly. So what you might try is going with what we call a red potato or a boiling potato. Some people call it a waxy potato, but the sort of Yukon Gold is another thing. It's kind of a medium starch potato. So it's going to give you a little bit more of that soft texture that you might be used to with your russet, but it's going to hold up a little bit better. So I would say try using a red or white kind of boiling potato, and that might hold up a little bit better. The other thing is it depends on, you said you're using radishes and celery, and those things can start to weep a little bit when it sits in the dressing, especially if there is a lot of that seasoning salt. So, every potato salad that's got that's well seasoned and has a little bit of, fresh vegetables, fresh crunchy things will weep a little bit, but it shouldn't get super soggy. So another thing you could do is you could just lightly dress the potatoes that you want to eat that day, that most of them, and save the rest and dress them the next day. Those would be two ways around it.
Tom, thanks a lot. Hope that helps. Before we go back to our callers, Molly, I want to check out another recipe you shared. Again, it's at WPR.org/Food Friday. Mustard crusted roast potatoes. Sounds really good. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, well, I wanted to sneak that one in, Rob, because I wrote a book all about roasting, so obviously I'm a big fan of roasted food. And this, the mustard crusted roasted potatoes, speaking about Tom's potato salad, it almost looks like a potato salad before you put it in the oven, because you put a pretty good amount of mustard and olive oil and a little bit of lemon juice. So it's almost like a raw potato salad and then you put it on a sheet pan or a baking sheet and put it in the oven and roast it at a pretty high temperature. And it gets super crunchy. Those really killer French fries that almost have a crust on them. It's reminiscent of that, but it's got all this flavor in it. So it's a really wonderful, a way to kind of, you know, fancify or dress up your basic roast potatoes. And for that, I do use like a red potato.
And I got to ask, what kind of mustard? We've got a whole museum here in Wisconsin and Middleton about mustard. Which kind of mustard goes into this potato dish?
Well, that would be dealer's choice. It would affect how it would turn out. I like it with a Dijon, but I also like to mix Dijon and a whole grain. But I bet you've got some pretty nice, you know, honey mustards and sort of sweetened mustards out there that would do it too, that would work nicely too. You just want to be careful if you add something that's too sweet, it'll brown extra quickly because of those sugars.
Find that mustard-crusted roast potato recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll go back to your calls now. Patty is with us in Eau Claire. Patty, hello.
Hi. I make a sweet potato gnocchi, and after I boil the gnocchi, I fry it with vegetables, and I always end up, my gnocchi always ends up sticking to the pan, and I lose some of the potato on the bottom of the pan. Any suggestions about how to resolve that?
Great, Patty. So are you, after you cook the sweet potato, are you then mixing it with flour and things?
Yeah, so I cook the sweet potato, then I mix it with flour, a quarter cup of Parmesan cheese, half a cup of ricotta cheese, and then I mix it into a ball, and then you get the strings out, you know, you roll it out into a string, and then you cut it into gnocchi size.
Yep, and then you boil them, right?
I boil the gnocchi for about 2 or 3 minutes. And I'm just wondering I'm not drying the gnocchi enough before I put it into the pan.
Yeah, I would say a couple things. I would say you could try adding a little bit more flour, although you want, you know, as you know, the more flour you add, the tougher they're going to be. So if that feels like you have a nice texture, after you boil them, make sure you dry them and even lay them out on a clean dish towel or paper towels if you want, on a plate or a tray or a baking sheet, and really let them dry. I would even refrigerate them for a little bit if you have time, just to really dry them out. And then when you're sauteing them, just make sure you've got plenty of oil or fat or butter or something in the pan. If you do cook with a nonstick pan, that would be a super help there too. But just, I think if you could make sure they're cool and fully dry, that should help you quite a bit.
Thanks a lot for the call, Patty, at 800-642-1234. It's Food Friday. We're talking about potatoes with Molly Stevens, author of cookbooks including One Potato, Two Potato, and All About Dinner. Let's go back to your calls now with Donna in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up?
I always make lefse, and of course I make it with russet potatoes, but someone said you can make lefse with sweet potatoes. I was wondering if your guest has ever tried that.
Wow. I've never made lefse with sweet potatoes, but now I want to try it. I think it's a great idea. The thing I would be, when you make your lefse, you want to tell people how you make it?
Well, I boil the potatoes and then I rice them and then I rice them again and then I rice them again and then add butter and all of the other ingredients and just add the flour just before I roll out the lefse.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. I think the thing I would caution with sweet potato is it doesn't have the starch of the russet potato. So it's going to be a lot wetter. So you're going to need to add more flour. One thing I think what I would try, and this is sometimes kind of goes back to Timothy's question, when I try to make changes to recipes, I often make incremental changes. Mm. So what I might do is I might make a half sweet potato, half russet potato lefse to start with and see how it goes and you know, judge that way. Because I'm afraid if I went all the way to a sweet potato the first time, it might just end up a big sloppy mess or I'd have to add too much flour. And then back to the gnocchi question, it's just going to be tough. So I think I'd start by trying a half and half and it would get this pretty, really beautiful color and some of the sweetness from the potato, but still have that wonderful tender texture that you want in your lefse.
Donna, thanks a lot for that call. I want to take a couple minutes. Yeah, it was. A couple of minutes to talk about braising, Molly, which you've written a book about. We saw a piece you wrote about braising fall vegetables, potatoes, and sweet potatoes, and all the other great stuff that's up this time of year. First of all, could you just give us the basics of how we braise these root vegetables this time of year?
Right. Braised vegetables is such a... It's probably going to make some for supper tonight. When I started talking about braising, when I wrote the book All About Braising, I thought I'd be braising all these big cuts of meat. And of course I did, but braised vegetables, you just get such incredible flavors, especially with all, as you mentioned, the root vegetables. So something as simple as a pan of braised potatoes, you just put a layer of potatoes in the bottom of a pan and add a few aromatics. Maybe it's a sprig of rosemary or a simple bay leaf, a little bit of, it could be water, it could be broth. And then a little bit of butter or olive oil, and just simmer it with a lid on over low heat till they're tender. And you just get, it's one of those things where the, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, just all these wonderful flavors and tenderness.
That sounds super good. Okay. I'm going to bring you a question that comes up in my life pretty often, Molly. I like to make oven fries. Sometimes they come out nice and crispy. Sometimes they're just sort of soggy fry shaped potatoes. Any advice on getting them crispy more or less every time?
Yeah, if you want, it's that happens to all of us. And potatoes, even though there's, it's Russ, it's classified as a starchy potato. Those starches change during the season or change during storage. So if you want your oven fries perfect every time, you need to take a cue from the fast food and the restaurant pros. You need to twice cook them. So what I do is I parboil them. I cut them into sticks, you know, French fry sticks, parboil them, not till they're tender, but just so they're just starting to cook. Pull them out, drain them again. Then I coat them with a little bit of oil and into a hot oven. And you could do it a little bit ahead. But again, the same thing we talked about, you want to dry them out, we'll cool them down a little bit, and then into the hot oven. And they're going to, you'll end up with crispy, brown, delicious French fries.
Whoa. Okay, I'm going to skip the rest of the show. I want to go try that right now. Know, Molly, right? Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Rob, it was great to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Molly Stevens, a Vermont-based cooking teacher, recipe developer, editor, and cookbook author. We talked to her today about a lot of the things she's written about. Her books include One Potato, Two Potato. Her most recent is All About Dinner. Hey, there's still time for you to share your Potato Land favorites over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know what you like. We actually heard from Darlene on Facebook, who says purple potatoes right out of the garden box, cooked with onions, curry powder, vegetable broth, canned whole tomatoes, and a splash of coconut creamer, cooked for 6 minutes in the Instant Pot. Simple, Darlene says, and awesome. Share your simple and awesome potato recipes on the Ideas Network Facebook page, and check out recipes that Molly shared with us over at WPR.org/Food Friday. I'm going to try a couple of them at home, maybe as soon as this weekend. They sound really good. Also, share your ideas for future Food Fridays. Is there a food or cooking question you want answered, or just something you really like and want to hear more about? You can email your suggestions to ideas@WPR.org, and maybe we'll talk about it on a future edition of Food Friday. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Jarrett Adams spent nearly a decade in prison here in Wisconsin after a wrongful conviction for sexual assault. After getting his conviction overturned, his record expunged, he became an attorney himself, working with others who are wrongfully behind bars and with people who have long sentences for minor offenses. He shares his story in his new book, a firsthand account of some of the injustices in our criminal justice and prison systems, and how he's trying to make them right. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know spent time in the criminal justice system? How did it impact life after getting out? What barriers to reentry did you encounter? Do you have questions for our guest about his experience and the justice system here in Wisconsin, which has the worst racial disparity for imprisonment in the entire country? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jarrett Adams is an attorney and the author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. Jarrett, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate being back on.
Well, you've shared your story with us in the past. I want to focus in on a particular moment here. You write in your introduction, quoting, "In this country, we have two criminal justice systems, the one you can afford and the one you can't." Can you talk about how that system let you down? It worked differently for you and one of your then friends who was charged but was able to afford an attorney. Can you talk about that double system?
Yeah, it's a double system for sure. I mean, and you don't have to just take my words for it. You can look at the numbers and they glaringly show it. In my case in particular, there were three of us accused of the sexual assault. Only one of my friends was able to afford an attorney. me and my other co-defendant, you know, we were assigned an attorney off of a panel list. And that directly impacted my case so much so that the retained attorney for my friend was filing motion after motion after motion. My attorney and my other co-defendant's panelist attorney as well never joined in his motion. They never gave us the opportunity to. They made the decision to proceed forward to trial. And it was the fork in the road that took almost a decade of both of our lives.
And that's one of the most frustrating parts of your story, to read the interactions you had with lawyers during your trial. Can you talk about how that system let you down? And you write, it's not just that it's the lawyers themselves. Those public defenders are often overwhelmed with many cases.
They definitely are. And in particular, in my case, we didn't get public defenders. You know, the public defender's office was conflicted out. So we were assigned attorneys off of a panel list in the state of Wisconsin, and in other states as well. There's a panel list of attorneys who are assigned cases by the court. And the problem with that is this. First of all, the amount of pay is so low that you don't get the best representation. Not many attorneys are going to go do cases for $50 an hour or $70 an hour. And so that was, you know, a big issue in my case as well. And then, you know, it's one of these things, Rob, where you're on an island and you are facing the might of the entire system. They're not playing when they say state versus whoever it is. And it was just glaring. No investigator was hired in my case. And I thought it was just me. When I got to prison, when I started to meet other men and helping them with their cases and learn about their cases, I saw this across the board.
You spent time, almost 10 years, in Wisconsin's prison system. And you write that for people there wrongly or who are guilty, you don't see the prison system doing a lot of good to turn them around. What were some of the biggest flaws, the problems you saw in Wisconsin prisons?
You know, it's just, first of all, there's overcrowding. It's way too many people who are in prison, and they are in prison as a result of these old draconian sentences and in the ways in which we feel like lock them up, throw away the key forever. And so, you know, you're in this prison, and these mandatory sentences, they are the seed for hopelessness. If people know that they're going to be in prison, no matter how good they are, no matter how much they change and how much they reform, if they know they're going to be in prison for two decades, there's no incentive for them to do anything positive at all. So that was one of the biggest things. Another thing is this, Rob, there's no correcting at all going on. You're being warehoused in this prison. And you're pretty much just getting up, going to sleep, getting up, going to sleep. There has to be an investment in the people that are there. Inmates are people as well. And you just don't see the educational tools being handed out. Most people who are incarcerated will go home at some point. And we are doing a horrible job of preparing people to reintegrate back into society.
Talking to Jarrett Adams, attorney, author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Jarrett, something I hadn't known until I read your book, you ended up in Boscobel, once called the Supermax Prison in Wisconsin, billed as being this site for the worst of the worst in the prison system. How did you end up there?
So you know that old saying in baseball, if you build it, they will come? That's exactly what Boscobel was. There was this rush to build this sparkling brand new facility for the worst of the worst. And it was one of these things where they took the Jeffrey Dahmer murder and they used that to scare people into getting the funding to build this prison. And when they built it, there was no worst of the worst like that. There was only a handful of people who you could say even, you know, deserved and met the criteria to be there. So what they did was this. They started to, like almost like a quota ticket system, they started to create allegations of confidential informants and putting people in segregation for 360 days at a time. And they swept me up in one of those. And they did this in large part because I continue to litigate against the Department of Corrections, their handbook, and some of the things that we weren't getting access to education-wise in there. So it's just, you know, it was one of these things where you had this message going out that it was necessary, that it was needed, but then you saw people going there for, they broke off the front of their razor to get a close shave, or, you know, this person had food in his cell. And it just was ridiculous. And I don't think anyone really looked under the hood until, you know, they had so many people packed and the litigation finally opened up Boscoville to a normal prison that it is now.
Okay, Jarrett, you spend almost, again, 10 years. You've been working on your case the whole time. The Innocence Project helps out. Finally, you get the conviction overturned. Your record was expunged. If you had said, I'm going to stay as far away from prisons and the legal system as I possibly can, I would get it. You went the opposite direction. What made you decide to become a lawyer and work to prevent this from happening to other people?
You know, I will, there are certain things that I will never forget, you know, being in prison for so long. And one of the things isn't an act of violence. It was looking at the creases of pain and anguish on my mother's face. You know, I'll never forget seeing that. And I also acknowledge this. Look, this started because I told my parents I was going to spend the night over a friend's house. My friends told their parents they were spending the night over my house. So we snuck to Wisconsin to go to this party. And it just was the worst fears realized. I now know why my mother was creative and keeping me busy in the summer. And, you know, all type of things that African-American parents have to do to keep their kids out of trouble. And so when I came home, I knew I had a penchant for the law, and it became a passion, and I was driven to remove the wrinkles and creases of anguish off of other mothers' faces as well.
You had vowed you wouldn't come back to Wisconsin unless you did it as an attorney. Can you share this moment, you share it in the book, at the state capitol, I think it was, when you were sworn into the Wisconsin bar?
You know, I was sworn into the Wisconsin bar by Keith Finley. So it was
of the Innocence Project.
Yeah, of the Innocence Project. And so it was really, you know, really a dream type moment, you know, to hear him, you know, swear me in, you know, motion that I get in and I be accepted and acknowledged by all of the justices. And I'll make this point too, Rob. If the justices, if the courts could see me as I am now, when I was a 17-year-old, I never would have been sentenced to 28 years in prison. And so I think it's a point that I want to emphasize on, and I enjoyed the moment, and it inspired me to keep going to create other Jarrett Adams.
We're talking to Jarrett Adams, attorney, author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced the criminal justice system on either side as someone accused of a crime, somebody defending that person, somebody prosecuting it? Have you seen somebody in your family go through this experience? Have you yourself? What could we do better, do you think, here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions for our guest. It's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Jarrett Adams about his new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. Now an attorney, he was wrongfully convicted, spent almost 10 years in jail, or in prison, I should say, before the conviction was overturned, his record expunged. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Alicia is with us in Portage. Alicia, hi. Alicia, are you there? Nope, let's go to Vivian then in Green Bay. Vivian, hello.
Hello. I am a product of a very rural Wisconsin community. I'm in my 70s and watching exposés, going back to the New York Five, to so many things through the Innocence Project, I think justice system is a misnomer, and when anyone refers to it that way, I say we don't have a justice system, we have a judicial system, and I've never had any encounters in that system, but I don't see it as a justice system.
Vivian, thanks a lot for the call. Jarrett, what do you think of Vivian's distinction?
I agree. And it's, you know, it's encouraging, you know, to have, you know, someone in Green Bay in their 70s who's been around a while and seen a lot in life, you know, to acknowledge that. And now we just need the officials, the lawmakers to acknowledge it as well. We have a system that pounds people, especially people of color. One in every 36 Black Wisconsin adults is incarcerated in a state prison in Wisconsin. I mean, that number should make everyone drop what they're doing and turn their attention to fixing this system.
Thanks for that call, Vivian, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Pierre in La Crosse. Pierre, hi.
Yeah, I am calling because the justice system, there is a white justice system and there is a Black justice system. What you can't even say called justice system, because I have a family member that was charged with a crime. They charged with the highest crime in order for them to just try to negotiate it to a lower crime where they should have charged them that at, in the first place. And in the same person, they were charged high with a felony. And I know another person that did almost the same crime. They got charged with two different felony, but that person with the two different felony end up having no probation, nothing to do because they were white, and that other family member end up having to be on probation for a year and paying a whole bunch of fines that he cannot even afford.
Pierre, thanks for the call. Is this a common story, you think, Jarrett? Two different systems, Pierre says, depending on race.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think people should you know, just look at the numbers, you know, look at the recent article that came out, you know, in Wisconsin, 42% of the state prison population in 2019 was African-Americans. I mean, just think about that. Think about the number of residents in the population in Milwaukee, which is the biggest jurisdiction where the African-American population is. I mean, if you think about the men that we have incarcerated and you think about the issues that exist within the inner cities, you're taking away a proponent that could fix, that can change, that can mentor. We're literally throwing away people with this truth in sentencing. And it was ran on the basis of, let's do truth in sentencing. Let's, you know, have all of these sentences where we give this time and they have to complete it because it'll make us safer. Rob, it's not safer. It's not.
Pierre, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And Pierre's call reminds me, Jarrett, he talked about, you know, being charged with one thing and settling for a lesser offense, something you learned from your personal experience. And then again, as an attorney, is a lot of times people, especially maybe a young person in that situation, it's complicated. Courts are complicated things. They may not be getting good advice when they're making that kind of decision on the spot.
Absolutely. And there's also this, Rob. Look, people make decisions sometimes to get out of the pain that they're in. And I met a number of different men who pled guilty just to get out of the Milwaukee House of Corrections, only to come back and go to prison because they were on parole. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we have to inject in our system is this. We have to get more therapists, social workers, forensic psychologists. We need to allow the world of therapy to mend this system. I mean, I'm talking about both ends, right? I'm talking about both correctional officers. I've seen and have befriended some correctional officers who come in to these jobs and within, you know, a year or even months, I mean, it's almost like they're an inmate as well. They're feeling the effects of this system, which is telling us something. The system isn't working.
Talking to Jarrett Adams, attorney. He was wrongfully convicted, spent almost 10 years in Wisconsin prisons. His new book is called Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. Jarrett, wrongfully convicted. You're in prison for so long, 360 days in segregation, as we mentioned, at Bosque Bell. What got you through?
You know, I had a round table of angels and my mother and my two aunts. And I opened the book up, Redeeming Justice. The first page is a dedication to them. And what they would do is they would write letters in a staggered approach, One would write a letter on Monday, the other on Wednesday, the other on Friday. And they would write these letters and they would, you know, have Bible verses inside of them. And, you know, I asked my aunt, you know, because she would give me like the newspaper subscription. I would get it late. And I asked her, I said, why do you, you know, send this paper still and you guys write these letters? I hear from you guys enough. I'll talk. And she says, no, listen, there's a reason why we're doing it. And the reason why we're doing it is this: we've acknowledged that they've confined your body, that you can never let them incarcerate your mind. And that was one of the things that kept me getting through. You know, when I came home and I was on a race pace to get this law degree. And I remember my boss at the time, I was working at the Federal Defender, you know, she was just like, you know, look, you got to take a break. Like, what are you, you know, moving so fast for? And the real reality, Rob, was this: that decade wasn't just stolen from me. It was stolen from my family as well. I was cookouts, fish fries before I went to prison. I come home, there's dialysis treatments, there are visits in old folks' home. So I was racing because I wanted my aunts to see me get this law degree. And I was fortunate enough to get that done before my aunt Josephine passed away.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tina is with us in Shawano. Tina, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I've been a practicing attorney in Wisconsin for almost 34 years now. And I've been a prosecutor a couple times. I've been a defense attorney. I've been a social services attorney. I've been a judge on a few occasions. And, you know, my observation is that our system is not only broken, it's completely corrupt. You know, not only do we treat, you know, people of color, you know, differently, substantially differently, you know, it's really all about money. The courts have to, it's like any other bureaucracy, the courts have to make money. And they charge fines that no one can pay. No one can pay those, even if they have, you know, a decent job, which in Shawano is like $14 an hour. You know, they don't take an effect, you know, how this process affects families. You know, they drag out cases. They overcharge. They over-sentence. I mean, it's completely corrupt. It doesn't work at all. And if we want a system that works, we have to provide more of it. You know, for lack of a better word, in the Native American community, would call it a healing program.
Tina, thanks a lot for sharing your perspective. And Jarrett, that reminds me, part of your work now is on wrongful convictions. You're also worried about what Tina mentioned there, overcharging people for lesser crimes, either longer prison systems, sentences, or as Tina mentioned, unpayable fines.
Absolutely. I mean, Tina was spot on with that. We over-punish and pummel the poor. In our society, I want people to understand there are people in living in the inner city, you know, in Milwaukee, where every dollar and penny is accounted for month to month. And so, you know, a speeding ticket, a red light camera ticket or something like that can throw them off of their entire budget. You know, I also want to point out this, you know, I'm representing a guy right now, Antoine Robinson. You know, he was convicted of an armed robbery along with his co-defendant who was Caucasian. His co-defendant, you know, received a significantly less sentence and has been home now for quite some time after only serving about 7 years. Mr. Robinson has been in prison now for the last 20 years on an armed robbery where no one was killed and no one was shot. It makes absolutely no sense why we can't even get a court to you know, consider really using the law of sentence modifications. It's just, we have to overhaul the system, and that overall has to be more than just changing the faucet. We need to rip up the floor and change the pipes.
Jarrett, just in our last minute, do you see that happening anytime soon, that kind of reform, that kind of overhaul?
Well, it's anything like this on this grand scale is going to take a lot of folks, a lot of time and a lot of resources. And this has to be spearheaded by the law schools as well as the judicial system and the lawyers and prosecutors. Everyone has to have an all hands on deck approach. And I'll use this as an example. We just dealt with the pandemic where for a while people stopped fighting with each other because we were fighting this deadly virus. And, you know, what we did was come together and figure it out. And then we went back to fighting each other. But the point I'm making is if we all came together and decided to make change, real change, systematic change, where we got diverse people on the bench and in a prosecutor's office, we would have a much better system and we would have much better communities than we have right now.
Jarrett, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. You guys have me back anytime.
That's Jarrett Adams, attorney and author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. You can listen back to this conversation and anything you missed here on Central Time by looking through our archives. Those are on the WPR smartphone app and at WPR.org. While you're there, find coverage from WPR News, our latest podcasts, and stream the Ideas Network live.